because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol, but we're going to start out in Green Bay last weekend at the Republican State Convention.
Yes.
I found it fascinating, J.R. Those are the foot soldiers. Those are the activists. And there was palpable misgivings about Donald Trump as a nominee. Agree?
I was told by one Republican that it was a quiet convention and that there was just kind of like they were coming to grips with, or that they were in mourning or in like the stages of grief or whatever it was, they weren't just quite there yet about Donald Trump. And part of it because we were the epicenter of the anti-Trump movement, you know, the last stand. So it might be harder for Wisconsin Republicans to get back on the Trump train or get on the Trump train than it would be for other states because they tried so hard to stop him here and were successful in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I was you and I both talked to a lot of delegates. I talked to one 30-year, very active Dane County Republican who just got livid, and he supported the party. He considered running for the legislature over his history. He can't support Trump. His wife had to finally come up and say, hey, dial it down a little bit. Talk to us about your straw poll. You asked, well, go ahead.
Well, we asked two things. One, who they want to see is Trump's running mate, and Gingrich and Kasich were the two top vote getters. Two, if it's Trump, Clinton, what are you going to do? You know, we're kind of wondering if Republicans will come home this fall. And looking at it, about 81% said they'll vote for Trump. Only two people said vote for Clinton, which isn't a surprise.
Two out of, how big was your survey?
300 people.
300, now, okay.
They said there were 1,200 people at the convention. I don't know if that's a number I really
agree
with.
That's a little highballed.
But be honest, every convention I've covered, the number's been like a little bit higher than I thought they were. Anyway, so about 81% said they'd vote for Trump. Two people said they'd vote for Clinton. Others, like 4%, won't vote for president or said they wouldn't. Now the question is, it's May. How is it going to look come October, November? Will these people come home? Because you're seeing national polls right now that show, for example, the Fox poll this week. Trump was up on Clinton. Maybe that's because Republicans are starting to come home to Trump while Clinton has this primary going on yet with Sanders, where the Dem party now is a divided one, where it's trying to get past its issues. Look at Nevada last weekend and the video Jared coming out of there. Yes. So, you know, that's kind of going on. So, but what's interesting was people come from the booth to vote, and they would, you'd see the ballot, and they'd go, and they check Trump's name. So even the people who are willing to say their vote for him aren't enthusiastic. And why is that important? These people are the ones who man the phone banks in October, which they're calling you at night, hey, come out and vote for Trump. You know,
and
this
in 2010,
weekend.
They said, elect Scott Walker. And in 2012, they said, help Scott Walker survive the recall. And in 2014, they said, help re-elect Scott Walker.
And now they're going to go out. They put the yard signs up. They make the donations. They're the ones who feed the activities, if you will. They're the ones who, when you say, go out and find 10 friends to vote, they find 10 friends to vote. So now, will they go out and work this fall for Donald Trump? Well, I don't know that they're going to. I mean, they may get there eventually. It was interesting. Some of them are like, the Trump people in my district, they're saying, we don't need you. Well, yeah, you do. You need us to go out there and work, because are you going to go off your duff and go work for Donald Trump and down the ticket, which is just important for Republicans here, to work for Trump and down the ticket? Will you do that? Because you're not, you haven't been active in the party before. Are you going to turn out and take our role, if you will, if you don't think you need us?
Right. And I found most interesting whether the speakers mention. In fact, we're going to listen to three segments. First group is Republican leaders who said Trump's name, said it big, Scott Fitzgerald, Congressman Duffy, and Congressman Jim Sensabaugh. Let's listen to them endorse, and the curious way they did so, Donald Trump.
When Reince Priebus came out after the Indiana primary and said, you know, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee, you know, that was a signal to me that we needed to start to coalesce. I think the party does need to unify right now and win some elections in November.
I know everybody here didn't vote for Donald Trump, but most everybody in my district did. He won there, so I can say that. We have to rally together. We have to work together to make sure that a Republican candidate, a Republican nominee, is the next president. It's incumbent upon all of us to make that happen. And we're going to make America great again with Donald Trump.
I said I would support the nominee of the Republican Party and that I would not vote for Donald Trump in the primary. I've done that. Donald Trump has won our nomination fair and square. And I voted for Ted Cruz in the primary, together with 64% of the Republicans in my district.
So Senator Fitzgerald said, look, we're all in the Trump train. Mm-hmm. Congressman Duffy waved his arms and said, he carried my district, he can do it. And Senator Brenner, in his curious way, his very unique way, he's been in the U.S. House since 1979. He's a dean of our congressional delegation, said, won it fair and square, not with my support. He, Congressman Senator Brenner, voted for Cruz and 65% of his district. So weren't you struck by how hard it was for some of those speakers to say Trump's name?
Congressman Senator Brenner sometimes likes to carry the cross, if you will. So he was carrying the cross of, I voted for Cruz, but I will sacrifice, you know, that for Trump for the good of the party. What's about Fitzgerald, though, is he didn't mention Trump during his speech at the convention.
Nope.
He talked about, let's not have a litmus test for candidates. Let's get, you know, fired up for somebody to deliver a message. So he didn't even talk about Trump on the floor of the convention. Neither did Robin Voss. Neither did Governor Walker. I mean, all these state people were not talking about Trump.
Right, which is a perfect segue. Let's listen to how Governor Walker and Attorney General Schimmel, how they did not say Trump's name. So next soundbite.
I've been asked for the last 2 weeks over and over and over again by the media, is the party united here in Wisconsin? Well, I want to tell you clearly, the Republicans in this hall and across this state are overwhelmingly united behind Ron Johnson to be our United States Senator. That's where we can have the biggest impact, not just on the state of Wisconsin, but on the nation as a whole.
You know, we have all worked very hard to elect a reform-minded governor and state legislature and constitution-respecting Supreme Court justices here in Wisconsin. But I have news for you. None of it will matter if we elect the wrong president. The United States Supreme Court, evenly divided right now, the next president's going to decide which way that balance tips. Our voter ID law could be in jeopardy. If we get this wrong, though, and elect a president who will appoint U.S. Supreme Court justices who believe the Constitution should be constantly changing based upon their personal interpretation, all of our laws are in jeopardy.
So when Governor Walker said, I'll tell you what unifies this party, Ron Johnson's candidacy unifies this party, excuse me. There,
I know where you're going.
Yeah, you know where I was going. What struck you about Governor Walker, a former presidential candidate, not saying Trump's name?
Well, it wasn't just him, but Rebecca Clayfish really pumped up Ron Johnson. It seemed like the message of the convention was, Ron Johnson, we need to get Ron Johnson reelected. Now, what's interesting about that is that how do you drive that message home when you're not talking about the top of the ticket, which usually drives turnout? And that's going to be an issue for Republicans in general. But for Walker, it's the dance that he's been doing for a while now, where I'll back the eventual nominee. I signed a pledge. We signed his pledge. Now this is the nominee. He's going to support him because Hillary Clinton. And that might be the one thing Republicans can cling to at this point, is that we're not enthusiastic about Trump, but we hate Clinton. Now, here's the issue, though. I was taught by Republicans over and over again, 12 and 14, just because they hate Scott Walker, they will not beat Walker on that alone. You have to have a positive message. And a candidate who inspires people, gets them out. So if you have the hatred of Clinton, that's one thing, but where's your positive message from Trump? Where's your inspirational candidate to motivate your voters to get out there? That piece is missing right now.
Well, let's talk about what Schimmel said. We need a president who will name potentially three Supreme Court justices, and we can't roll back, yada, yada, yada. Well, why didn't he close a deal and say, we need Donald Trump as president, he should appoint the next three Supreme Court justices?
I interviewed Rebecca Clayfish after her speech. I pushed her because she's faced some of the same sexist comments that Donald Trump has made in the course of his career, in the course of this campaign, if you will. So how can you support a guy who said stuff that you've had to deal with? And her point was, I'm voting for the Supreme Court. It's a four-year term for a president.
Yeah.
It's a lifetime appointment for the Supreme Court.
Yep.
I'm voting for the Supreme Court.
Right.
So that might be the justification for some of these guys that, look, you know, the Supreme Court's going to last a lifetime, and I need, in my mind, to have Scalia's spot filled by a conservative, and maybe these other justices who are in their 70s and 80s could retire at any moment. I mean, in theory, if you are a liberal justice and you're in your 80s, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if Clinton wins, this is the time to retire when you have guaranteed somebody of like-minded justice philosophy would replace you.
Okay. Yeah.
And then if you're a conservative, you're trying to hold on as long as you can.
You sure are. The final soundbite comes from Congressman Reed Ribble, who is retiring. And I interviewed him one-on-one because I thought maybe his anti-Trump feelings would have been modified some or evolved, but listen to what he said. He doubles down anti-Trump. He doubles down.
He's continued to call people names and kind of get in the eighth grade schoolyard bully mode that he likes to get into. I believe anytime you build barriers between people or between groups of people, you put a wall up, before you can actually find any commonality or common ground to solve problems, the wall has to come back down. And so you've wasted all this energy on a fight that's absolutely irrelevant. And so there's no need to call Hillary Clinton crooked or Ted Cruz lying Ted or talk about Carly Fiorina's face. This is all nonsense, childish games. He spends too much time just insulting people.
I want to close this segment this way. Come back to your poll. 19% of Republicans, delegates at that convention said they wouldn't support Trump. Bad sign? Good sign for Hillary?
Possibly. Maybe not for Hillary, but for a third party. I interviewed Ribble as well, and he said Libertarian Constitution Party, look at those nominees as a possible vote this fall because he won't vote for Trump,
right?
Won't vote for Clinton. So where does he go? But again, will those folks come home? I mean, right now it's still kind of raw.
I know. We're 5 months out.
So maybe come October they go, you know what, I just can't. I got to vote for this guy because I just can't stand Hillary Clinton. Maybe that's enough.
Okay.
And I think Republicans are banking on that being enough for some of those folks. Again, the hardcore folks who turn out. But, you know, Republicans haven't won Wisconsin in a presidential race since 1984. They came close in 2000 and 2004. Right now, Donald Trump's not cut the figure of a guy who has the best chance to win Wisconsin.
Yeah.
There is a window. In theory, if he does well in northern Wisconsin and western Wisconsin, where he won his congressional districts, and gets the normal turnout in the WOW counties and Green Bay, and that gets him to a couple points down, right?
Yeah.
Unless Hillary Clinton is so unpopular that turnout is down for her, then maybe you've got a path. But if it's a quote-unquote normal year and Trump's where he's at right now, it is tough to see winning Wisconsin.
And we're going to do the same autopsy on the state Democratic convention, which we'll both be at. Okay, new subject. Stop the presses. Conservative justices Mike Abelman and David Prosser sides with liberal justices Shirley Abramson and Walsh Bradley. It's a major decision. For the second time in 20 years, they have to decide how much statutory authority the superintendent of public instruction has, who runs the Department of Public Instruction, over rulemaking. So you had that unusual four-justice coalition. You surprised at that?
Yes. What's also interesting, though, is that, as a tangent, that four-justice coalition, there was Gableman's decision, there was a concurring opinion from Prosser, and there's a concurring opinion from from Abramson, with Ann Walsh Bradley joining the concurring opinion from him. They couldn't even get on the same page for, like, one decision in this,
right,
in which they came to the same conclusion, which is, they cannot make the superintendent DPI submit administrative rules to the governor.
Governor and DOA.
This all goes back to 2011. Republicans wanted to rein in the rules process. Now, when you pass a law, it doesn't just go into effect and that's it. You have to implement it, and that becomes the rules process. So these agencies take their laws and say, okay, how are you going to make this work? Well, for years, you've had Republicans complain that the agencies get their laws and then add these rules to it that get away from the original intent.
Yep.
What's interesting is Governor Walker is in charge of these agencies making these rules that they're unhappy with. But they're trying to lock this up for the future to keep other governors, give them that power.
Yep.
So they apply this rule to DPI. The problem is superintendent instruction is a constitutional officer.
106, Gov, mm-hmm. Lieutenant Gov, Attorney General, Secretary of State, Treasurer, and Superintendent of Public Instruction.
So the rub was, okay, you're asking this guy, who is a constitutional officer, separate constitutional authority, to submit to your will these rules. Now the question is, where's the line? Because some will argue, and the minority opinion did, that the legislature has the ability to kind of like add and take away powers, so why can't they do this? But the majority said no. The Constitution says you have to have this authority rest with on the supervision of DPI, and that's too much.
Okay, and let's just read the segment from what Justice Gableman, who wrote the lead opinion. New law gives the governor and the secretary of administration the power to manage, direct, or oversee the primary means by which a superintendent of public instruction and DPI are required to carry out their supervisory duties. Basically, he's saying if this new law went into effect, a statutory office, a constitutional officer, mm-hmm. would have no recourse. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Tony Evers victory statement. Today's ruling is a victory for public education and the future of our state. It is a reflection of the value our public schools provide to communities across Wisconsin and the importance of having an independent state superintendent oversee that system. Now, he said independent state superintendent because Representative Joe Sanfilippo wants to get rid of it, yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, his bill went nowhere. It amounted to one person's idea, right?
No, because, I mean, Tommy Thompson, 20 years ago or so, tried to basically create a cabinet position, right?
He did. A second superintendent of public instruction.
To take it over, to consolidate power. Governors tend to do that. That was nixed by the Supreme Court way back then. Interesting post note. Somebody pointed out, if you've got Gableman and Prosser joining Abramson and Bradley on this decision, it must have been a bad law to get that kind of a coalition. So there's that. But also Rick Essenberg, who's from the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Says that if you look at the minority opinion, there is a roadmap to still come back and adjust this some way. So now that's going to be interesting. Do they want to come back and try again?
Yep.
Or do they say, okay, look, we lost. Let's just move on. Because reality is DPI has some of these powers, but the purse strings belong to the legislature and the governor. And that's, you know, Tony Evers cannot stop the spread of school choice, for example, cannot stop the spread of charter schools. He can, you know, have some influence over the administration of those rules or how it's implemented, but the policy is set by legislature and the governor.
Well, and while we're talking about the Supreme Court, you've been very good about, you just put out a press release saying the 11 people who applied for Prosser's, who will be retiring in midsummer. So give us some of the names that we'd recognize.
A couple appeals court judges, Mark Gundrum from the Second Court of Appeals, former Republican lawmaker.
Yep.
Left legislature, he won a seat, Waukesha Circuit Court. Governor Walker appointed the appeals court. He has been.
So he applied.
He's one of my top candidates, if you will. The belief is that Walker wants somebody who's young, who can sit in the court forever, who's ideologically in line with him. Gundrum and Walker served together in the assembly back in the 90s, early 2000s. You got that connection. And he's very conservative. I mean, very, very conservative. So Gundrum has been somebody, he's got a large family that is looked at as somebody who would be good for appointment, that running for an open seat would be a little bit difficult for him because of the family situation, but appointment would be good for him. He would then have 4 years.
Until 2000.
Record,
right.
And then run again.
Yeah.
So he's top one. Thomas Mers, I think you say his name, from Wausau.
That's another Court of Appeals judge.
And Brian Hagedorn.
Brian Hagedorn, and let's talk about him, because he was the governor's legal counsel. Mm-hmm. He went from governor's legal counsel to an appointment by the governor to the Court of Appeals, mm-hmm. which is a rather big leap.
Yes, and going from attorney to Court of Appeals to Supreme Court would be another one. But remember, Rebecca Bradley went from lawyer
circuit,
appeals
court of appeals.
Circuit.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's been done before.
And you were telling me the chairman of the Public Service Commission, Ellen
Novak,
she applied?
An attorney. Now, for her, the attraction to candidacy would be, you know, another woman on the bench. She's also young. She could be there for a long time. To run for Supreme Court anymore, you pretty much have to be a judge. You have to have the black robe. But for somebody like Novak, she could have 4 years on the court, almost four, to build a record, to have the robe on. Mm-hmm. And then when she goes to retain the seat, she'd have that experience, and it would, you know, be a message to voters of, I've got the background you're looking for.
Jefferson County Judge Randy Koshnick, who ran against then Chief Justice Abramson in 2009, he also applied.
Got beat fairly handedly.
Yes.
Conservatives didn't really do much for him in that election because Abramson is one of the few justices who has a national fundraising network, so they didn't really do much to help him out. Jim Troupas, Dane County Judge, well, I think he's resigning.
He did not seek re-election.
Yes, he's leaving it early. You know, he's in his 60s. He's not going to be around for a long time, so I don't know if he's a top candidate. James Morrison up in Marinette County, another Walker appointee to Circuit Court. A couple of attorneys, Claude Cavelli, who applied for the last one and ran briefly to the Supreme Court. There's also one candidate who requested anonymity, so we don't know who that person is. But
and that's being honored by the governor's office. So
once
his or her
the
name
finalists
is not
are
being
named,
released.
They have to release the names. But
yes.
You can request anonymity in the application process. But I would say that Gundrum, Novak, Hagedorn, those are kind of your top candidates right now. Now, I don't have anything other than like kind of like the vibe from talking to people to mm-hmm. say that, but they're the ones being watched most people I talk to you for a possible appointment.
I like your idea that you might want to rate Gundrum as pretty high on that list.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, we're going to talk about this because it's a first. A regional body of representing states and the provinces of Canada just gave the initial okay for City of Waukesha to put a straw, well, an 8.2 million a gallon a day straw into Lake Michigan. Now, that's got to be finally approved by 8 governors in June. This is the first diversion, which is why we're talking about it, under the Great Lakes Compact. That's a potentially big deal
also,
if you're going to see other diversion requests.
Also interesting that at the meeting, which I think was maybe less than a month ago, a lot more concerns raised than were expressed in this decision.
Yep.
Now, I think the service area was restricted. You know,
they cut it back.
The amount of water being drawn was down from the original request. I think it's
from 10 million to 8.2.
So there's that. But unanimous vote. A couple of the Minnesota representative did not vote on that one. But
abstain.
It was said, don't look at that as an indication of support or opposition.
Right.
So far, so good, especially when you think about the talk at the first meeting a month ago. So we'll see. You know, but they're clearly an important hurdle, if you will.
But you have heard that water is a major, major issue for the next 100 years. So this decision to initially approve the diversion is big. We have forest fires, which may be created or contributed to by climate change. Mm-hmm. You have the water demands of Arizona. So that's a big deal.
They also have to monitor the health of a river down in
Root River,
yeah.
Which is once they get the water and they process it and use it, it's going to be discharged back into the Root River. They have to monitor the Root River for 10 years.
Yep. So a lot of interesting contingents, but a good vote for them at this point.
Okay, now this happened a week ago Friday, but we didn't know about it when we sat here. Be careful what you apply for, Mike Haas,
yeah.
A veteran Government Accountability Board official. You might get it, and he did get it. He has been named the elections administrator for the August 9th primary.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, supposedly he's got a four-year term paying, I think, $120.
But he's got a tryout, essentially.
Yes, he's got a tryout. Well, explain the tryout nature of that.
Well, when they made the announcement on Friday, now let's back up a second. Currently, there are four of the six commissioners appointed. The governor still has to pick from these pools of Dem and Republican candidates to fill them out.
Yep.
But they have a majority to appoint someone. So they announced this guy has been hired. He's going to get a four-year term. There's a line in the release that's important. We will really reevaluate after this election cycle.
Yep.
Now, that will allow the two additional appointees to weigh in as well.
Yeah.
But also, it's kind of like a tryout for Mike Haas. How do things go this fall? Now, here's kind of the dynamic. One,
here's the backstory. Go.
Mike Haas is part of the GAB that was involved in a John Doe investigation that irked conservatives, to put it nicely. To no end, because it delved into the coordination between Governor Walker's campaign and conservative groups during the recalls.
Yep.
There is a taint, if you will, for anybody involved in the GAB if you're part of that process. So they're livid that somebody who's part of that process, and I'm not saying that Mike was a central figure in that, but any connection to the GAB gives you a taint for these guys, that he somehow got a job with the new GAB.
But when he joined the GAB, he joined him as chief legal counsel, which mm-hmm. means, and then he got appointed to election administrator, which means he was pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
He was at Kevin Kennedy's side,
yes.
And in those closed meetings with the former GAB, the band of former judges,
yes.
As they walked through the John Doe process. Not only that, but he ran for the legislature in 92 and 94 mm-hmm. as a Democrat, former staffer to Democratic Assembly Speaker Tom Loftus. So that raises, how did Fitzgerald put it? There's some uneasiness.
So
on the part of
Fitzgerald's saying, I'm not sure this guy will get confirmed by the Senate because everyone's controlled by Republicans now. We have an election this fall. Who knows what will happen? If I were a betting person, I would guess Republicans should come back and control, unless Trump becomes a nightmare candidate and there's a bloodbath this fall for Republicans. Most of the seats up are decent Republican seats. They shouldn't have too many things to worry about, so maybe lose one or two but come back.
Yeah.
So if that all happens and they're in charge, Mike Haas has a high hurdle to clear. Now, here's the rub. The Elections Commission looked at going, okay, we take over June 30th, I believe it is. We have to run an election in August and November. If we have a clean sweep of everybody who's involved in the GAB, what's our brain trust
there is no
to
continuity.
Run the election?
There is nobody who's been talking to those local election clerks for the last 2 years.
So Haas brings some experience and credibility in that regard. Now, when I said I don't know how central role he was in the Joe, remember, like, the emails that we saw in the O'Keefe lawsuit focus on Shane Falk, for example.
Yes.
I don't remember, and I memorized all 10,000 where they are, But I don't remember any from Mike Haas with inflammatory language like Shane Falk. So, you know, there's some ease about Haas, but if he runs these elections well, if they come off, and I'm not saying that it'll be all because of him, but if they turn out well, how do you dump the guy in January then? That's going to be the rub for Republicans.
I agree,
too.
And that's why Haas's statement is, I would hope legislators would evaluate me based on my performance. Okay, last subject, quickly. There were three measures of the state economy and state debt. First, I'm always intrigued, but I follow too closely, too anally, Department of Revenue tax collections. July through April, April 15 was a filing deadline for personal income taxes. They were up 4.5. Fiscal Bureau...
4.4 in January is what they were saying.
Okay, but Fiscal Bureau had predicted year over year 4%. So it's slightly higher, actual tax collections. So then why defer, why kick that $101 million debt service payment into the next 8 years?
A couple of things. If it's about this biennium, and it's possible they're seeing things they don't like in the revenue numbers, because I talked to Bob Lang from Fiscal Bureau this week. He said, you know, sales tax collections were kind of soft in April. Keep an eye on that. Corporate collections were down 2 months in a row. I believe they expected corporate to be down the first of the biennium and then pick back up in the second. So maybe that's just in line. But remember, we changed withholding tables back in 2014.
Yes.
As a big tax cut that the Republicans pushed through ahead of the election. We're still getting used to the impact of that because now it's impacting behavior and refunds. And so the money flowing out that we're going to see might be different than what we're expecting. So it's still something to just pay attention to, if you will. The other thing may be that it's not about this budget. It may be about the next budget. Is there a way to build up a bigger cushion? Because if you look at the dynamic of, as we've talked before, Medicaid keeps eating up all the free dollars.
Yes.
Governor Walker's talked about finding new money for K-12 education. Transportation fund is not getting any healthier with gas tax collections. How do you find money to do that? Maybe this $100 million is part of a down payment toward the next budget.
Okay, longer.
Build some cushion.
Now, a longer strategy.
A possibility. The governor's office, all it says is we're taking advantage of historically low rates, which they've been zero for a long time now.
So and by the way, Democratic and Republican governors have been doing this since 2002.
So, but there may be a couple things at play, I guess, is what I'm
trying to say. And then the second thing. Okay, I'm always interested in how some of these national reports see us. So the Pew Charitable Trust said, Wisconsin state government's long-term debt, fourth lowest in the U.S., largely because our pension system is funded, and I'm always curious, who are the three better states, South Dakota, Tennessee, Nebraska? This was just a national indicator. But when you look at, we look so good, we're fourth, you have to consider that in 2004, we borrowed $1.4 billion to fund our pension system. So there's a little bit more to that story. And then finally,
don't forget that Tommy Thompson, what, you tried to transfer a couple $100 million out of that fund back in the 90s?
out of the ETF pension fund. He got smacked down by
this. Yes, just like Jim Doyle with the Patients Compensation Fund.
That's right, that he got smacked down too. Third, the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance put out a report. Long-term liabilities of state government have stabilized since 2011. Despite this improvement, Wisconsin's long-term fiscal health still trails most states. The alliance has us at 37 or 38. It's just interesting. Just three indicators.
Well, you know, again, remember debt, long-term debt, transportation fund, bigger chunks going to debt than before.
A new $850 million in bonds for transportation in this biennial budget.
Didn't do a vertical building budget basically this biennium. So there are lots of issues out there still to be resolved. We'll see.
Yep. Okay. Just three indicators. Okay. WIS Politics stock report rising.
So Tony Evers, I mean, hey, he got a win, you know. He's a lone wolf out there sometimes when it comes to education policy, but this was good for him to maintain some kind of autonomy in this. Now, again, the question goes back to what might they think of next, or is there another avenue trying to get back at this issue? But for him, good. Oh, by the way, he has drawn a challenger already. Greenfield superintendent, I believe it is, announced on Tuesday. Plans to run in spring of 17.
Okay.
So just a little PS on that one, and others might come forward in that race as well.
Now, you picked Ron Johnson. I'm giving it away. You picked Ron Johnson mixed. Is this because he's parsing the words support and endorse? Well, go ahead. It's your call.
It's deeper than that. It's that to win, Ron Johnson needs Donald Trump to win Wisconsin come November. I mean, We've so lost split ticket voting. They're so tied at the top of the ticket. He needs Trump to do well. Now the question is, how does Trump do well? We've talked to Northern Wisconsin, Western Wisconsin, maintain Southeastern and Brown County. He is not doing well in those areas. I got Charles Franklin pulled some polling together for me, comparing where Romney Obama were in 2012 mm-hmm. versus Clinton Trump in spring, same time roughly. Trump is doing well across northern Wisconsin, Minneapolis over to Wausau Rhinelander. He's doing well there. He is not doing well compared to Clinton, or was in March, in western Wisconsin. Romney and Obama were close. It's not out there. It wasn't, at least in March.
Okay.
But the big problem is the WOW counties were down for him dramatically, and Brown County. The key for Republican to win statewide in Wisconsin is not just turnout in the WOW counties. It is the Fox Valley. Because the theory used to be, when I'm sure 15 years ago, if you're a Democrat and hit 62% roughly in Milwaukee County, you were going to win. Everything else would balance out. That was the key.
Yep.
Well, now no they're more. So good at turning out the Republicans, the WOW counties, the Dems, Milwaukee, and Dane County, it's the Fox Valley. It's not just about winning the Fox Valley for Republican. It's about hitting a certain percent that gives you the margin to offset like the Eau Claire and La Crosse area. Trump is not there. So what Johnson needs is Trump to do well in western, northern Wisconsin and western Wisconsin. And then for talk radio, for example, who does not like Donald Trump, will not bang the drum for Donald Trump,
no.
Those guys sent a message of, we're not talking about Trump, but turn out for Ron Johnson this fall. So now, in a state where Obama won by 7 points in 2012, even if you get Trump doing better up here and over here, even if you get talk radio to get this to turn out, that gets you maybe to 49%. You still need to find some more voters. And Johnson has yet to break out of that kind of base election campaign, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, listen to a speech on Saturday. Senator Johnson is a very serious person. He offers his election in very stark terms.
He does. It's you about know, the future of the nation from an economic and debt standpoint. Yeah, go ahead.
The structure of our nation in some ways, the way you put it. Right. He got in some trouble about bringing up an analogy with Flight 93 from the September 11th attacks and tried to swat that back.
We don't have time to go there.
Yes.
Yeah, he tried to walk that back.
But Governor Walker is excellent at, even when he talks about things in stark terms, about having a positive, uplifting message. Ron Johnson has not captured that positive, uplifting message yet, or that may not just be who he is. It may be a reality of this is what you get when you have a private sector person working in politics, but he's got to break out of that base election model and out of 2010 and get into a 2016 model. Now, if Hillary Clinton underperforms in Wisconsin and she's not, let's say that you know Clinton has a 4-point, like if you were making bets like football, give her a 4-point spread, right?
Okay.
That's how she's favored. Let's just say that.
Okay.
If she loses a point because Sanders people don't come home, this is a point because people are depressed, then you're getting closer. But you still got to find a way to break through those people in the middle, and that's not quite clear yet. And the Trump thing, it just hangs over the party right now for statewide election come November.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, falling.
So Governor Walker's been very interesting this week talking about UW system.
He sure has.
So he's been talking about accountability.
The groaning by the faculty? Okay.
So he fired his first volleys really last week talking about these stats, which turned out to be incorrect, about UW-Milwaukee. And the fuss being raised by these faculty members. But this is kind of like Walker saying, okay, his new line is tenure is jobs for life. These guys want jobs for life. It's obvious people
and we altered that by striking the state statute and giving the regency authority to enact guidelines on tenure.
Tenure should be about academic freedom. They want jobs for life. Obviously, Scott Walker got a pull somewhere from somebody, and that pulled very well because that is now his answer in the tenure debate. But he's gone beyond that talking about, well, you know, maybe we should do a freeze for a fifth and sixth year. You know, maybe that should be on the table. That's, again, his answer to the calls to refinance student loan debt.
Mm-hmm.
Make it cheaper on the front end. You know, let's find a way to do that. Now he's all talking about accountability with our tax dollars. What does that mean? And now I haven't got a good answer for that yet.
I understand.
But during the last budget, remember Walker said, well, they can afford this cut. Make them teach one more class a semester. Ray Cross is going, no, 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 that's not how it works. Well, Governor Walker's also on the radio this week talking to Jay Weber saying, well, maybe these star researchers that they have that they're talking about bringing us money in, maybe they should get separate contracts. We treat them differently.
Wow.
So now where is this going? Might there be another whack at tenure in the next budget? Might there be a cut? Might there be a tuition freeze? We don't know. But from Walker's people, this is the, you guys have pushed us with these no confidence votes. This is the governor pushing back on that.
And all I want to do is add a PS as we wrap up. When I interviewed Voss, he surprised me by saying, had it been up to me, I would have struck tenure out.
Mm-hmm.
Wipe tenure out.
Yes.
Completely. He said, I only allowed to let the regents enact guidelines on tenure as a compromise, as a favor to Ray Cross.
And I, Republicans I've talked to, there are some who are like, let's just not pick a fight with UW right now. We don't need to do it. Haven't we done enough kind of thing? Because these are the, you know, obviously Madison is an easy target. Milwaukee is too. But for a lot of these out-state campuses, they're job creators and job generators in, you know, these districts. So they're kind of like, ugh. Now, here's the rub. It's going to be a tight budget, all right? If Governor Walker wants to do a tuition freeze, can you do that on top of another cut? How do they swallow that?
No, but Voss told me my first priority is to hold
keep where we are. Yes.
In the current budget, they give the UW $2.08 billion, and Voss says, I'm trying to hold that. And by the way, no confident votes hurt my ability to hold that.
And do you really think the university feel like it's a win to be held flat after the cuts they've taken the last 6 years?
No, absolutely not.
And the freezes?
Okay. Final question before we wrap up. Former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Diane Sykes, now on the Federal Court of Appeals, was on Donald Trump's list of potential Supreme Court nominees. You're not very impressed with that, right?
Somebody I saw said that it's like Ted Cruz picking Carla Fiorina for his VP nominee.
Yeah, I see.
So, but it was to send a message. I mean, Trump is trying to reassure the conservative base that I'm with you, you can trust me. That argument we talked about before about I'm voting for the Supreme Court, maybe that's aimed at that a little bit. So, but Sykes, she has been somebody mentioned before as who would be a conservative darling to be appointed.
Yeah.
Now, what's fascinating is Donald Trump, like not even a day later, is saying, well, those are just some people. I might go off that list
names.
And find some other
ones.
Those are just like
names.
The kind of people I pick. And one guy on there is a Texas judge who has made fun of Trump on his Twitter feed.
Oh, my gosh.
His name is Willett. Go check him on Twitter sometime. There's some great – I think one I saw was a picture from – the Twilight Zone episode when the guy was on the plane. I think it was Shatner on the plane. They kept seeing the guy. And it's Donald Trump's face in the window looking in.
Oh, my gosh. It's fascinating. Okay, we're in overtime. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 20.